that's good stuff. Ry Cooder featuring the Hamiltones with Emmy Lou Harris at Tanglewood on Sunday, July 1st at 2:30. How cool is that? So we're going to be hearing some more from Ry. We're also going to be hearing some more from Emmy Lou Harris. So that'll be lovely nice coming day, up this morning as our In-N-Out music.
There ain't nothing better in the world than Emmy Lou Harris.
No. You going to the big show this weekend? Yeah, okay.
Ry Cooder played with the Stones. Yeah.
Right. Ry Cooder.
Ry Cooder is on a Stones album, I think. Mm-hmm.
That sounds familiar.
Let's check that out.
Okay, we'll check that out. Right. I'll do some research as soon as I'm done this. As soon as we get into the base, you know, the core of the show, I'll start working on that.
Oh, that this wasn't okay.
No. Well, maybe. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the roundtable. It's Friday, and it is the the 29th of, is that right? Yes, the 29th of June. It's Friday. Good morning, and we're delighted to have you with us. It's a hot and sultry day out. It will be all weekend. We are in the midst, apparently, of a coming heat wave, which is 3 days in a row over 90 degrees. That's what constitutes a heat wave, and apparently we're going to hit that. So get ready.
I look forward to people complaining about the heat instead of the cold for a change.
Yeah, so it's kind of nice. Yeah, that's great. I have no problems with that.
The Northeastern way.
Yeah, right.
That's right. It's the Northeastern way. And you also hear this a lot. You know, we just go right into winter, right into summer. Yeah. There is no spring anymore.
Okay.
Well, good morning. Let me introduce the panel to you. We are delighted to have everybody here. Aaron Pasidi is here. He is a economics professor at Siena College. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. And my favorite Emmy Lou Harris song is Red Dirt Girl.
Oh, good stuff. Would you like to introduce the special guest you've brought into the studio with
you? Sure. Much like when Frank Sinatra recorded in the studio, he would always bring guests into the studio so he could record in front of a live audience. So to amp up my performance, I brought my parents, Nick and Diane, in this morning.
Bravo.
Nick and Diane.
Bravo.
Very nice. Well, they live in?
Just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, in Hudson.
Ohio. Excellent. Well, it's a delight to have you both here. Thank you very much. We like having people who react to our nonsense. Wait till you meet Rich. Rich,
I already said hello. Said hi. They're very nice.
Rich Odin is here. He is a corporate attorney and our dear friend. And good morning, sir.
Good
How
morning.
Are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Good to have you here. I missed seeing you last week. It's good to have you here. Jen Smith also is here. We are thrilled. Normally, she would be with us on Wednesday. We had our big immigration panel on Wednesday. So we said, hey, would you like to do Friday instead? And she said, yes, absolutely. So here
True
you are.
True story.
And I can't make it up. And we're thrilled to have you as well. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
I'm nursing all my wounds over the Supreme Court and the rest of it. I just think it's all going in such a bad direction now that we just.
Well, good morning to you, too.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, we're going to try to. We'll try to make you feel better today.
You will? I'll be good.
And it's probably not going to happen for a little while because we have a really horrific story to start off with.
We do.
But then we'll try to make things a little bit better anyway. Of course, there was the shooting yesterday in Annapolis, Maryland. It was five people killed in that attack of a newsroom. And, of course, anyone in journalism, it is something that comes very close to home and is very disturbing. It was a man with a vendetta against a paper in Annapolis, Maryland. The Capital Gazette is outside of in Annapolis in Anne Arundel County. And he fired a shotgun through the newsroom's glass doors and at its employees, killing five, injuring two others. 38-year-old man of Laurel, which is outside of Baltimore and between Baltimore and Annapolis, and he is due, I believe, in about an hour and 10 minutes in Annapolis District Court. Local police say that the Capital Gazette was targeted, prompting the heightened security in newsrooms nationwide. The attack appears to be the deadliest involving journalists in the United States in decades, and believed to be since 9/11, the deadliest attack with journalists involved. God love them, they got a paper out last night, basically from the back of a pickup truck that they kind of put it all together in. And five lost, and there are many Gerald Fishman, John McNamara, Rebecca Smith, Wendy Winters, and Rob Hyacin. And Rob Hyacin is the brother of a dear friend of mine and a wonderful, wonderful writer, Carl Hyacin, who has written Striptease and Sick Puppy and many other novels, and from the Miami
Herald. Great books, very funny.
A wonderful, wonderful writer, and journalism was in his family. Rob Hyacin was his brother, and Rob Hyacin, who was one of the editors, was killed. So I should mention that Gerald Fishman was also an editor at that newspaper. Mm-hmm. So it is a tragic story. I mean, obviously, shootings are have become more and more commonplace in our country, and yet this one hits because it was in a newsroom, and it was targeted because of what these people do for a living.
You know, Joe, newsroom, we see journalists giving up their lives all over the world to do their craft. And the mental health issue here is so interesting in that, you know, this guy was sure that he was being victimized by the paper. That could happen to anybody. We get letters here saying, I know you're not reading my letters on purpose. And you wonder, you know, just how angry somebody can be. But compared to the killing of those little babies out there in Connecticut and all over, and these children, it's a terrible thing, but it should never devolve into just a war on journalists, because it is so much worse than that.
On Monday night, I went, so we talked to Barrington or Berkshire Theater Group. They had their church and state play and their talkbacks. Monday night, I went to their talkback because it featured Greg Gibson, the father of a survivor from the Simon's Rock shooting.
Yeah.
Mark Barden and his daughter. Mark, I unofficially or unplanned interacted with him in 2012 when I got sent down to cover the Newtown shootings. Mm-hmm. And we divvied up a list of names and I had to profile his son. And it was the first time that I was able to look him in the eye and say, I had my job to do, and you recognize that in one of the worst moments in your life. And we spoke for a few minutes. We talked about, you know, what should I do as a reporter when this happens next? And lo and behold, a few days later, a newsroom very much akin to the scope and size of a newsroom I work in, people doing the same jobs, went under attack. I've been on the recipient end of an email telling me I should die. I've been spat at. I've had stuff thrown at me. People telling me how to do my job. It's nothing new, unfortunately. I've been to places across the country continents. In Pakistan, I had to travel around with armed guards, and I wasn't even an active journalist there, but I was going to newsrooms that just 2 days earlier had news vans bombed, and they have barbed wire fences outside and concrete barricades and guards. And whether you work in a newsroom or a school or you're just going to enjoy a concert, no one should have to live in the state of wondering whether they're going to be vulnerable to an act of violence. You know, when I received a, I can't call it an outright death threat, but someone told me I thought I should die. They thought I should die. You know, I put it in a file. It was a highly emotional story where, you know, it appealed to their senses. But a few days later, I got an email back from that person and said, you know, I apologize. I was upset. And I said, you know, I forgive you. I get it. We're both human. Stick that note in HR just in case something happens to me, because that's what we do.
Put that on file.
But there's a level of forgiveness. And as a reporter watching this story, I mean, I have so many questions. You know, obviously motive is one of them. You know, what makes someone hold a grudge if that's the case for
5 years?
Yep. Something to that extent. You know, how was the person licensed to have the arms that he did? You know, it raises questions about security in in places. You know, obviously warning signs. There's so many things. We aren't a protected class. I have to pay extra to have life insurance. It's not an automatic given because we're a tightly strapped, you know, operation. These are the realities that not only we face, but many other businesses, entities face. And this is just, you know, how greatly this matter has proliferated,
you know,
in our society.
You mentioned Church and State, a wonderful play, which I just think is fantastic. I did the talk back one night. You know, the premise of the play is that there will be, there is a Republican senator who has always been pro, you know, Wayne LaPierre and all the rest of it, who turns around and does the right thing because kids in his area get killed. I wish I could see some of that happening, but I just don't see it.
Well, I think in that regards too, it's not an issue. You know, there are other things we can do. There are a lot of issues, sure. But, you know, one of the things I walked away with after, you know, hearing from the parents of school shooting victims was that, you know, we have these programs out there that talk about how kids can recognize, because we hear suicide, right? That's another good reason to have, you know, gun control, ERPOs, so on and so forth. But do we have funding for these programs that educate kids to look for warning signs in school? No, that doesn't exist. No. There are a lot of other things that can be a part of this conversation, and a lot of just general practices of looking out for each other, not perpetuating some of the negative statements that are said. You know, I really didn't know who, I can't even pronounce his last name, Milo, whatever. Yiannopoulos.
Yiannopoulos, in regards to the New York Observer.
But yeah, doesn't make it any better for anyone who, you know, perpetuates the hatred that he's spewing. Was that related to this incident? We won't know for sure.
Well, and it was certainly put out, and I don't know if it's fair or not. Mm-hmm. My knee jerk reaction to it is that it's not. Mm-hmm. But the idea being, with the president saying enemy of the people, calling the press enemy of the people, and you know, does that perpetuate this? You know, people have hated the press long before Donald Trump.
The only thing that made me question a little bit of how that came into play was when NYPD and LAPD started sending their security teams to newsrooms so that it was, regardless of what motivated this incident, it was recognized as something that could produce copycat incidents.
There's nobody out front here I might want to add.
So, I mean, depending on how you define mass shooting, there have been 154 mass shootings in the U.S. this year, which is just shy of one a day.
Amazing.
I know. And that trend does not seem to be abating.
Yeah. And there's no there still is not really a forum to have a real discussion about. We're kind of around the edges of now talking about mental illness, you know,
right.
Sure. Been talking about gun control forever. But I can't say that there's been a forum or I can't say there's been a real discussion on it where I feel like something's going to get done.
And what would you like to see done?
I'd like to see, I said a couple of months ago, several shootings ago that, yeah, I mean, obviously on the political side, you want to see some kind of gun control. You want to see, on the Jen, to your point on mental illness, you know, you'd like to see treatment for that. You'd like to see more early warning. You know, in a way, though, you said, you know, the idea of having kids be aware of, you know, when other kids may be at risk or something. In a way, we've kind of, our society has, correctly, we've been very big on the privacy rights, right? The privacy rights of people who are dealing with mental illness and trying to keep that, you know, so that's kind of their issue. But now, now that comes in conflict with this idea of, you know, so what do you do if somebody tells you something in confidence and now, you know, how do you share that? Mm. And I do feel the same things you feel, Jen, because I know that, you know, I get a lot of email, you know, when I'm on here and some, and you know, to me personally, you know, at work And some of it's, you know, most of it, it is, you know, give and take. But, you know, some of it's pretty disturbing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know I spoke at a thing, the First Amendment thing put on by the Writers Institute last year. And there was a pretty big crowd. And there were some big players there. And I brought my daughter along. And a couple of times, you know, both before and after, as I was kind of making my way on and off, you know, I was, you know, some people were... you know, into it, you know, not in a terrible way, but a couple of times I kind of, you know, looked around and said, maybe I shouldn't have thrown my daughter into this.
Yeah. And I think that's the issue that goes beyond just, you know, we're talking about mental illness and we have no clue what the state of,
right.
of this, you know, alleged shooter in this incident. But I think it also comes down to just human decency and, you know.
Well, how divided we are as a country.
And, right. you know, well, even if you're upset about something, you know, wait before you say it, but I think there's sort of this immediacy of needing to, you know, react to something. And I think, I mean, I don't know what the solution is to that. And, you know, for my own experience, I, you know, the one thing that I took a little bit more seriously than others, someone came around and apologized. That doesn't happen in every case. But there are just so many other things that are happening to journalists and people who are trying to do their job. You know, I think of the World Cup right now and how many female reporters are being groped on air and sexually assaulted and you know, people trying to kiss them while just because they're doing their job. And again, you know, just talk about human decency and personal space. Yes, you could be compelled for whatever reason to do whatever you do, whether you're drunk or seriously sick or, you know, have a lot going on in your life,
but it doesn't excuse the
it
behavior.
Doesn't it right. does not excuse the behavior.
We're gonna take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. Obviously, we will have letters. We welcome your letters. It's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. we'll continue on the subject and we'll talk about others as well. We do welcome your thoughts. We have Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Aaron Pasiti, and Rich Honan with us today, and we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we will continue our conversation on the panel this morning after this short break.
No more sorrow, roll is cold.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Aaron Pasiti, and Rich Honan. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We have a few, and then we'll continue our conversation and move on to some other stuff as well.
Now, sometimes I don't understand the letters. Here's one for you, Rich. Maybe you can explain it, and I hope it isn't something.
I don't know what the hell this person's saying. Rich?
Stephen says, Rich, let it bleed. Do we have any idea what that means?
Let It Bleed is the song that Rai Cooter played mandolin on with the Rolling Stones. Nice.
Good.
Played mandolin, too. Nice call.
Good music.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I like that. Right. He was it's after better. The Weavers? Okay.
Post-Weavers.
Yeah, post-Weavers. Okay.
Go. So, good pull.
So Toby has a good letter here. Please don't always assume that a shooter has a mental health issue. That's your point before, guys. Some people are just angry expletives and think that they have a right to take another person's life. Mental illness is a real problem in this country, but using that as an excuse for almost every mostly white shooter harms the conversation about the issue.
I think it does, because I think there's a larger point to this. I mean, I'm not saying mental illness is not an issue in some shootings, but if you look at per capita gun ownership rates, the U.S. is off of the chart. I mean, but the handful of countries that are, you know, a pretty distant second, third, fourth, and fifth are the Scandinavian countries. Mm-hmm. And the one big difference between the U.S. and Scandinavian countries is the degree of inequality. So when you have 40 years of growing inequality and wage stagnation, people feel hopeless. They feel like opportunity has been taken from them. And that could lead them to strive to, you know, feel that they're powerful or take out their hostilities in other ways. So I mean, I agree with that. I don't think mental health is the only issue. But if you look at a cross country in the macro comparison, that's what separates the U.S. from other countries that have large gun ownership rates per capita, is the level of inequality and the degree of economic mobility.
I love it when you use words like macro, because it makes me feel, you know, that we have an expert here.
I do it just for you, Alan.
Yeah, thank you very much. But also, here's another one from. I happen to think anybody who points a gun at somebody and kills five people has got to be crazy. I think so.
Now, they can't be just evil? Because to the point of the last letter, we were talking at the break about, some people are just bad people.
Yeah. Well, I agree some people are bad people, but I also think you have to be crazy and really out of whack to do what this guy did. But anyway, who knows? I know I always get letters from mental health professionals. I used the word demented this morning. I said, and don't be sending me any letters.
That would
they
be...
They have a right to, though. Yeah. I think that's they're defending their... profession. Yeah.
But I have a right, Jen, to tell him not to send me a letter.
You do.
Don't I? I mean, there are letters, there are rights on all sides.
I mean, if we go by that, anybody who ever, you would plead insanity for every infraction you ever did, because it would be perceived that not a normal person would do that.
Right. There are plenty of mentally ill people who don't shoot other people.
And that just adds to the stigma of mental illness too.
Exactly.
Problem. Absolutely. I have to say, this is getting off. I'm going to take a quick detour here, although not very far, which is, I say this as we're talking about the power of journalism and what happened in that newsroom in Annapolis, Maryland yesterday. But watching the cable news networks respond to this yesterday, it is journalism at its absolute worst when those things are going on.
How do you figure?
Because they're grasping. They're speculating. They bring on people and they're talking and they're saying, well, maybe this and maybe that, and we don't know. And this blanket, nothing is confirmed at this point, but we can assume this.
But Big Joe, I have a question for you.
Yes.
What would you do if you were the news director at those places? Would you not do that?
I think you can report the news and report what it is, but my concern is with these panels and bringing in FBI people and saying that because the person hid under the desk that they had this diagnosis and that diagnosis, I think that's very dangerous. And I think there are people watching television right now at that moment who didn't know whether the person that they are related to was alive or dead.
That's something, I mean, that goes along with training too. Again, that's why we're trained as journalists to be, the way I've grown up is that you're in a rush to be right. And if you don't know things, you don't speculate.
Right.
I would look at that situation yesterday. I was really dismayed that the fact that a reunification site was broadcasted. You absolutely don't do that if there is an active shooter situation.
If you don't know if there's somebody else involved in the shooting.
Yeah, because now they know all know to go to Lord and Taylor.
Right.
These are things that we're trained to say, even if we have that information, we don't share it until everything is confirmed. We know that there's no other worry. We know that that place is secure, because then we could be responsible for putting people in harm's way. And that's something we as journalists don't want to do. And I think, sometimes you do as a reporter have to go to battle with news directors who want to put one thing or another. And that's the truth of the industry too. I think we are in a 24/7 news cycle where you do have to keep things going, but you have a choice too. Where for me yesterday, I was tweeting a lot of stuff, and at one point I was like, you know what, the editor in chief there said I can't talk about this. Don't ask me to talk about this. And I said, in solidarity, I'm taking a Twitter break. I'm pausing. I'm not going to perpetuate anything that I don't know, because there was a point where it was four people, five people. You don't know. And why are you perpetuating extra hysteria at a time it's not needed?
And maybe we shouldn't be talking about it right here this morning, because you guys have, in your, benevolence, believe we shouldn't be... speculating, and we're doing some speculating here this morning, aren't we?
Yeah, but part of it on the print side, I see what you're saying, Jen. On the TV side, what's become part of that medium is also networks criticizing each other for coverage and non-coverage of things.
Right.
So if you're I'll pick on Fox News.
Fox did this thing yesterday, which is that what you're getting to?
No,
what did they do?
Humanity
Well, there was some question as to Fox before they reported the story, allegedly, this is some of the reporting that was done, wanted to know the political bent
right.
of the newspaper prior to reporting the story.
And what was the Hannity thing again? He did something.
Hannity went out and
after Maxine Waters, but
and said it was her fault that this happened.
But I think one of the things they might also, and I don't know what they were thinking, and I agree with you. I mean, it was a lot of people speculating. It wasn't news, excuse me, and that was across the board. But I wonder if part of what they're thinking is, if I show this or if I don't show this, am I going to be second guessed? Am I going to be, so if you're on Fox and you're saying, well, if I go away from this and I show the hearing between, Trey Gowdy and Rosenstein or something, right. are people going to say, oh, Fox, lost no momentum in its political agenda, even while this tragedy was going on. I wonder if excusing it. I'm just wondering.
No, I mean,
that really shouldn't be part of the thinking, but I think that's part of the thinking.
But you can have a very short, direct, here's what we know, mm-hmm. this is what happened, and,
and
report
we'll
the news
you,
and not manufacture it based on speculation.
I also think I'm sorry, Alan, but just asking questions is different than speculating. So
correct.
Here's what we don't know. Here's some of the questions we have. Mm-hmm. Here are the things that don't add up, which I think is what we're doing this morning. I think that's fine, but I do think it's different when you start bringing in, and my real problem, I'll fine tune it. You said macro, I'll do micro, which is you go right into the one or two people who are quote unquote experts from some field, and in this case, like an FBI field agent, and they come in and they say, oh, well, obviously this person has had a troubled past and they had something happen when they were 12 years old, and that's the kind of stuff that I think is very
damaging. Do you think
it's impossible to know?
Yeah, well, it is, but I know what I did, and I don't want to be hypocritical about this. I was sitting there watching CNN. And I got a little bored with what they were saying, which was kind of obvious, and I went to MSNBC to see whether they had anything more specific than what we were watching there. And the question I would posit to all of you is, now they're bringing on survivors. Now, survivors aren't experts. They're just survivors who can tell you what they saw.
People who were there in that newsroom?
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
No, and I think that is news. I mean,
they're witnesses, right? I mean,
they're witnesses, but they were under a desk. They heard something. They can only say that they heard something. They can say they knew these people, that they were wonderful people, all right. But are they experts?
They were there. I don't know. And I'm going to defer to Jen. She and both of you folks are the experts. I would think that's compelling to talk to somebody who was a witness at the scene, possible victim.
Because they know better than anyone else.
Hey.
And again, instead of the go ahead.
Hey, it's all compelling. That's the point. I mean, I just don't want us to be sitting on top of the mountain, spitting over the side, saying you people don't know what you're doing. Because I think if you were the news director, it's the question I asked Joe. If you were the news director, that's what you would be doing. You would be saying, okay, people want answers, and we'll give them whatever we can if it means bringing an FBI guy or anybody else.
I don't know. I work in an industry where people want answers every day, every minute, and a lot of times I have to tell them I don't have an answer for you. And the other, when are we going to? We're going to know when the judge rules. When will that be? I don't know.
Who knows? Maybe Media Project will talk about it this
too late.
Today,
but we did it yesterday.
Next week, who knows? Yeah. But because it's still worth bearing talking about. But I think there's plenty of evidence of good practices with this, right? So if you go to AP or if you go to BBC, they have a timeline. Here's what we know. Here's what we don't know. There's nothing, I think a lot of papers and filling that gap, knowing, being mindful, they instead put a history of the paper. Here's how long the Capital Gazette has existed. Here's how it's related to Baltimore Sun. That's fine. That's neutral. It's news.
Neutral,
that's
boring.
There, but
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't think you're doing any justice to the situation when you bring in an outside expert to start projecting on a situation. I think as facts come out, and if that expert gives you context to that particular situation. So example, when I was covering Newtown stuff, I reached out to a Yale expert to say, what does this kind of incident, what kind of trauma can it, have on children and families? How should parents be talking to their kids about that? That's that I think is something.
Well, very respectfully. Mm. And of course, it's always with you. Very respectfully.
Not for the rest of you, but with you. Yeah.
But I do want to say that when they're looking for a heinous killer somewhere, they almost always go to somebody who is an expert on profiling why people do this stuff. So I don't agree with you. I think it's perfectly appropriate to bring on people to tell you what they know about this kind of shooting and who these people might be.
But you don't know what kind of shooting it is, like, 10 minutes after it happens.
Right. A minute into it, we don't know anything. We know that there's 5 cop cars outside. And we know what the main information that we got initially were the tweets from the reporter inside of the Capitol.
Yeah. You have to trust your agency to be a good vetter of the facts. You know, I remember having an incident once where I went into work one morning and people were cursing us out because we didn't report that a fireworks operator had died during the middle of fireworks at a ballpark. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure we would know that. But it took me 6 hours of phone calls and calling people and trying to figure out what the situation was. And it turned out that the result was that as a fireworks board malfunctioned, a guy had a heart attack and had to be air flighted. The air flight pad was located across in the ballpark, so people were putting two and two together.
Jen, but Jen, today, for example, a big story in the Berkshire Eagle, your newspaper and mine, has Van Shields, the very controversial head of the Berkshire Museum, resigning. And the first thing, when we all read that article by the wonderful Larry Parnes, the first thing we all wanted to know was, why did the guy resign after he sold all the Rockwells and he did all of that stuff? Why did he do all of that? The question we had. And I kept reading the article, and I really didn't ever get satisfaction as to why the guy left. So
do we speculate about it, or do we report about it?
Well, you ask 4 people, and each of them may have a different idea, but you ask people, did you push him out? Did he go on his own? I think I'm a little concerned about the way this conversation is going, because I think you guys are projecting into the experts information that they don't give you. They're not saying this happened to that. I mean,
I'm not going to ask MoMA, though, to say, what do you think happened? I'm not, even though they're an expert in museumships and.
No, ask the people on the board, for example. Well, ask the people.
We're having a different conversation because we're talking about what a newspaper would do after they have time to think about it. And we're talking about a reporting that was done yesterday, as we started this conversation, a reporting that was done yesterday on the scene minutes after the accident, or after the, not accident, after the shooting happened.
I think you guys are taking cheap shots. I do. And I think they're doing their job. I think they're doing everything they can. They're having experts. They're having
I don't think it's journalism.
I don't think they're doing their job. They're doing something, but they're not doing their job. Yeah, they're not being journalists.
I don't think they're being journalists either.
They're entertainers.
Yeah, they are.
No.
And they're taking I mean, the journalists were in that room. And the people were putting that paper together, and it was very different what was happening on the cable stations. And I think there was a lot of blame to go around as to who was as criticism to go around for all of those stations.
You're an expert news director here. If you were hired to be the news director at CNN or at $2 million a year, and you were sitting there.
But it doesn't make it right.
Well, I haven't quite ended this one. And you have to make a decision as to what you have to do in order to give people on the outside what they want, and you do it with experts and other people. I just think you do it, and otherwise you're not the news director anymore.
Okay, so if the people feel that in calendar, we have to go to a break. I'm horribly late, so let's do that.
I like arguing myself.
Really, I had no. Are you shocked? We will. We'll be back. We'll continue our conversation after this short break.
How could I see a future then, where you would not grow with such a fire? And a- our belly, such a hunger in our souls. I guess I probably loved you when those words rolled off your tongue.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And we have a lot of letters that have accumulated, so we'll get to those.
We do. From David, the shooting. I received this yesterday before the shooting. It came from the Southern Poverty Law Center. Far-right provocateur Milo Yiannopoulos, is that right?
Yiannopoulos.
A former columnist at Breitbart News, says he hopes angry conservatives will start assassinating reporters.
That's what Jim was
saying. We mentioned that, right?
Yeah.
I can't wait for the vigilante squads to start gunning journalists down on site, he texted to a reporter. Yiannopoulos has been a regular speaker at college campuses over the last several years. Scary thoughts. What's the latest shooter among others who listen to things like this? What do you think? Mark says, gun ownership and inequality. Hi, panel. You may have the link between inequality and gun ownership backwards. Owning a lot of guns is expensive and tends to be concentrate guns with those who can afford them. In other words, collectors and sportsmen with good incomes. Best, Mark.
Yeah, I don't think a $400 shotgun is expensive and the result of a cause of inequality. So, yeah, no.
And Jim says, media, how about this? The reason the press does what it does is that they need to make money and not get beaten to the headline by their competition, and the public wants this. The press had to attract viewers, and sensationalism, let's face it, attract viewers. Jim from Glenmont.
But you know what the answer to that is? Joe, you gave me a book a while ago, the book about Harry Truman, about the Truman victory.
Yes.
I forgot what year it was, but the name of the book was The Year.
Yeah.
And at the time, radio was really coming into its own, and everybody and all, and they talked about how newspaper editors were like, how are we going to compete with radio? How are we going to? And I.F. Stone, like the great journalist, said, he said, you know how we will compete with radio? By just being better newspapers, by reporting the news better and in more depth. It's the same answer for the internet. It's the same answer for social media.
And just one other thing that I hope is not lost in this, that was said in passing, but the way that the newspaper then used social media to report the story from inside the walls as an active crime investigation was going on was what social media can be, and I think that was amazing.
It's the positive that we see. It's the same thing what we saw out of the Arab Spring. It's how we know these things too.
Beth says, dear panel, as someone living with mental health challenges, I would ask that you reconsider your assumption that the shooter in Maryland suffers from a mental illness. One can be extremely angry, hold a grudge, feel victimized, even commit a violent act without having what would be considered a mental by mental health professionals to be a mental health illness. Doing so is unfair. It stigmatizes those living with mental health challenges even further. Only a very small percentage of those living with mental health challenges commit violent acts. I agree with that part of the letter. We are most likely to be victims of violence. Sincerely, Beth from Holyoke.
Thank you, Beth.
I agree with all the letter.
Yeah.
I agree with the entire part of the letter.
Yeah, oh, I see. You do? Well, he says only a small percentage of those living with mental health challenges commit violent acts. My response to that, Rich, for whatever it's worth, not much, is that if you shoot another person, if you kill a person, if you walk in and kill five people, you are away from the norm. In other words, crazy. So, that's the only difference we have here. Joanne says, mental illness. An easy substitution, perhaps more accurate, would be the term emotionally unstable to describe shooters when their medical history is unknown. And this is for Rich. You were very articulate Joyce.
Yeah, you know this is going to be bad.
You're very articulate.
Right? That's like, with all due respect, yeah. You know it's going to be bad. But go ahead.
You were very articulate until.
Yeah, you see, go ahead, bring it.
No. You were very articulate in comments about economic inequality as a cause of discontent, yet you support Trump's policies, tax cuts at all, that may increase the inequality you bemoan.
Yeah, Rich.
All right, first of all,
I'll let you handle
it. I love that somebody thinks that I am as smart as Aaron, because it was actually Aaron. I love being mistaken for you, on especially on matters of economic policy. So I agreed with Aaron on that, but that's quite a feather in my cap to be for somebody to think I actually said something that smart.
And Joyce ends by saying, hypocrisy or selective hearing from Joyce. And Richard says, panel, when one class of citizenry, a crucial in capital letters class for our democracy and republic, is singled out repeatedly, loudly, threateningly, as the enemy of the people by the president himself, bad things happen. That's from Richard.
I do not disagree with that. I actually love watching the Trump rallies, as you would guess. But I from the very beginning, I was always, and I don't mind him calling out the press, you know, as an institution, but I was always uncomfortable, and I remain uncomfortable when he actually, you know, physically points out, he says, you know, there they are right there, you know, there's Acosta right there, or there's CNN. I don't think it trends in a good way. I don't mind him criticizing, but I don't like him personifying it like
that.
Or
at the rally when he said, take that guy out and beat him up, and I'll pay for the defense. Well, you substitute from one person to the press, you know, it's a certain amount of that. Melissa says, mental illness. The talk of mental illness in relation to mass shootings is more of a feel-good concept. Most of these shooters do not meet the criteria for a diagnosis. They are typically angry white males with histories of anger and violence. The shootings are typically reactions to a perceived slight and less than something that would meet a DSM diagnosis. That is how they chose to act out their feelings, rooted in a machismo culture where men are celebrated for violence and shunned for being vulnerable. And
I'm going to hold you there. Yeah, we're sure. We're late for break, and Ray's ready
late
to go.
Break,
I don't want to.
Oh yeah, we
don't want to hold Ray up.
No.
We'll get to news right after this.
Together again, the gray skies are gone. You're back in my arms. Now where you
are. All right. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Rich is standing up and singing Kumbaya. It must be a
I was lip syncing. It was kind of like a karaoke version of Kumbaya.
I should make a gift for your social media site.
Yeah.
I'm going to start recording these intercession moments.
All right. Let's move on to another topic. Why, you ask? Because the panelists pleaded for me to do that during the break, so we'll do that. Let's talk about Justice Kennedy and what is happening in the political war to replace Justice Kennedy on the Supreme Court. It roared to life on Thursday, according to the New York Times and their piece on this. The start of an election season clash over a Supreme Court retirement that will reshape the country's judicial future. Hours after Justice Kennedy's announcement on Wednesday that he will step down June 31st, conservative organizations were mobilizing to support the Republican-controlled Senate in a quick confirmation of a justice who would be expected to vote against the court's liberal precedents. One group, the Judicial Crisis Network, has already started a $1 million ad campaign urging people to support the president's choice. But they don't really have a say in it, right? I mean,
right.
No.
Right.
Okay. So I don't quite get
it's not,
that.
Well,
Joe, I think what they're trying to do is put pressure on the doubtful senators who they sued the two that you really have to look at is Susan Collins, obviously,
and Lisa Murkowski.
That's right, and Lisa Murkowski. Collins, I have great faith in because I don't think she's going to vote against the woman's right to have an abortion. Murkowski, I think, is in a little bit more of a difficult situation politically. And now you come to the, are people going to have a profiling courage? Are they going to say it's more important to do what's right or it's more important to stay a senator?
The other thing, too, and I'll just throw this out, was there was also a fascinating article in the New York Times about the pressure put on Justice Kennedy over the last several weeks.
Yeah.
That was interesting. To show him the door, if you will.
Right.
And I thought that was some of the machinations of and a lot of it had to do with legacy, of preserving your legacy as a jurist.
It seems like it's part of the process of like polarizing the Supreme Court. And you look, I was reading a historical article last night that kind of looked at how the justices have voted over the years, and it's just become that margin has narrowed significantly since, you know, the early 1900s.
My position is that there's not much, and Rich can check in on this. There's not much about law in all of this. It's about being a Republican or a Democrat, and right. who appointed you.
So what? I'm sorry, but what about the three Democrats of Joe Donnelly, Heidi Heitkamp, and Joe Manchin, who all voted for Neil Gorsuch?
Yeah. Well, they wanted to survive.
Right. The stakes are so much higher here than Gorsuch, right?
We always knew that. We always knew this was going to be the big.
You were gonna. You were
I was gonna use the word macro again, just to make Alan
impress
smile.
Alan. Yeah.
Why we pay you the big bucks.
The Supreme Court is kind of the like last bastion of the organized right's attempt to shift all government functions as to make them as conservative as possible. So you see that.
Nothing biased about that, Aaron.
No, but, I mean, so you look at Reagan's decisions on who he appointed to the National Labor Relations Board, his actions on the air traffic controller strike,
and
the funding
and
of the Department
Obama's
of Labor.
On the other side.
So this has been happening, you know, since the late 70s and early 80s, and the right has been very conservative. And I'm not saying there hasn't been exceptions, like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and some of those, but it seems like the Supreme Court is like the last. I mean, that seems to be the main goal, the one area that conservatives have not been able to dominate and get to have a very consistent, you know, pro-business, anti-worker ideology.
Well,
and here, this is the time when it's going to happen. And that's, I don't know. That could.
Well, I don't agree with you. I mean, I think you take a look at this last decision on whether union members, you know, to do this. I think, you know, when you take a look at Justice Kennedy on things like abortion and some of the social issues, he's been pretty good. But when, you know, on gay rights. But when you look at him on, as a true conservative, he's been there with that crowd. And I think, Joe, you may have taken it the wrong way when I said it's Republican or Democrat. I don't mean who's going to vote for them. I mean who's on the court. I mean, we have basically five Republicans and four Democrats. We'll have five Republicans and four Democrats, and that's enough to carry the day.
Yeah, and the thing is that—
Go ahead.
Well, I'll go.
I was going to say, go ahead, Jen, because I was going to say something different. Go.
Well, I just think, isn't that part of the issue, though, is that you can clearly identify that and say that there's, Democrats or Republicans on the court when that's not what their mechanism is supposed to be.
Right.
They're supposed to be above the Congress. And
it's
now we're pushing,
legal.
Because Congress is not doing their job, so many cases, these landmark cases, are getting pushed to this smaller group of people.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder why we cannot. I really wish they could just ask the philosophical questions that they want to ask. I don't understand why it's bad to say, you know, where do you stand legally on abortion rights? Where do you stand legally on the state's right to regulate, you know, or restrict abortion? Why do we have to guess about that?
You think that they don't ask? You think when Trump has the guy in for the interview or the people are vetting them that they don't do exactly that?
Yeah, I don't know. And I'm sure you could divine it. But why does it have to? Why can't it just be open? Why can't you ask somebody, you know, what do you think of Roe v. Wade? You know, do you agree with it? Do you disagree with it? Why can we not ask that?
Which my problem with all of this is that we say, and you're the lawyer, but we say these are legal questions. People are going to work to the legal point, but they're not. It's just as if you have a United States
they're
Senate,
political,
either
I agree.
The Republicans have it or the, you know, in the Congress, and that's exactly what's become of the Supreme Court. And I think it's disgusting.
I think it's disgusting or not, I think the Supreme Court has always been a philosophical court. I think, you know, I just read the it's not that new, but this biography of John Marshall. And it really talks about how hard he worked. You know, we all know Marbury v. Madison, but how hard John Marshall worked to get lots of unanimous opinions. He even had the members of the court like stay in the same, you know, rooming house, you know, so like they would get to know each other and just how hard he worked at that. But it's always been philosophical questions. I mean, it's not really, I don't think it's strictly questions of law. You're talking about the rights of states, the right, you know, what do we do under the Constitution?
I mean, Roberts was the deciding factor in the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah,
vote.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, there are, you know, exceptions where, but
that was
to
quite
Alan's
an
point,
exception,
there is,
by the way.
No, but
I know. I mean, I was going to say, I mean, I think that's the exception.
I disagree. I think Roberts is channeling John Marshall now. I think Roberts is working really hard to make opinions as well. First of all, to get opinions out and to make them get as many votes as he can. And that's why I actually
you know that how
I hope you're right.
Just from look at the last he wrote the decision in the did he write the what you guys call the Muslim ban decision?
Yes.
All right. Did you read the decision?
He did. Yes. Yeah. He did.
Read
yes.
that decision. I mean, he works really hard to kind of to get the votes he was going to get and to make it as non-political as possible. But I think he's working hard to do that.
He's a Trumpian Republican. He was appointed to do what he's doing.
Alan, that's a contradiction in terms to say a Trumpian Republican. There's no such thing.
Why is there such a thing?
Traditional Republicans, and that's not what Trump is. It's a contradiction in terms.
I'm so sorry. I don't get what you're talking about. Put it in a different way. What the hell you're talking about?
Look at the traditional Republicans. Look at people who call themselves a Republican. They're the ones who the everyday Republicans were the ones who were the big never Trumpers and everything. I think he's much more. You guys say it with disdain, but I think he's much more transactional. You guys say, oh, he's a transactional president. He's got a transactional foreign policy. I think he is transactional. He's not an ideologue. And so I don't think he's a traditional Republican.
I didn't say that. I said he's a Trumpian Republican. It's an adjective. Don't you get it? Don't you see?
Is there a hyphen in Trumpian Republican? Or is that a compound?
Might have been a
adjective.
Participle.
Write your letters to Rich.
Anyway.
Speaking of letters?
Yes. All right, let's go to a couple of letters.
I had a question for Jen.
Go ahead.
Because a lot of the people on my side of the fence are kind of chuckling and pointing fingers back at Harry Reid, saying you know Mitch McConnell back in 2013 or whatever, saying don't do that, basically don't change the rules on voting on voting for judges, and I think they're just going to keep standing on that and say you guys started it, which I understand is not very mature, but right? When you're picking Supreme Court justices.
You're quoting Mitch McConnell? Mitch McConnell, the man who would not let Obama have the up or down vote, which he was entitled to, and now is saying, oh, this is different because this is midterm election, so we can do this. Come on, he's despicable.
Yeah, but I'm not disagreeing, but he got what he wanted, and by changing the rules for Supreme Court justices on the last round, when it didn't matter quite as much, he's now set the precedent. Now that's why 51 votes will get this done.
You want these or not?
Yes.
Okay. Jackie says, impulse control. There are two powerful and sinister influences inciting weak, ignorant, and mentally impaired people to act out of aggressively in our country now. They are right-wing television and radio talk shows spewing and encouraging hatred nonstop and widespread addiction to violent electronic messaging and video games. Many on the right are exposed to tsunami of fear and hate rhetoric 24/7. Eric says, hello, beloved panel. I cannot help but wonder if there's a connection between the whodunit media culture and those who want to watch for every detail when real events happen, detective shows, etc. Just speculation, not a shot. That's from Eric. And Steve says, Trump should not be allowed to appoint a justice of the court that may decide his fate. The Mueller investigation must be concluded before any appointment is made. Deborah says, first-time writer. I am a frequent listener of Roundtable and a mental health professional. For many years, I've treated individuals suffering from mental health challenge, and I find Alan's insistence that violent individuals are crazy as flat-out wrong and uninformed. I've admired Alan for his intellect and social activism, but he needs to better understand mental illness. Unfortunately, there are people in the world who choose to be violent who are not mentally ill, just evil. Deborah from Clifton Park. And Dave says, Munchkin, Heitkamp, Manchin, Heitkamp, and Donnelly. In the strategy, fall on your sword and vote no, or is it do what you need to keep the majority? Because if we jeopardize that, we could have more Trumpites on the court going forward. And
was it one last time? Even Bright? Oh, you weren't on for that. Even Bright.
And Susan says, hello, hi. Once again, a discussion ensues that totally ignores the fact the vast majority of these shootings are perpetrated by males. We did that already. Julia says, anger, rage, and rage control. We need a lot more focus on learning to control personal anger and rage starting in the schools. I think I read Toby's before. I think quite right. I'll read the topic sentence. Please don't always assume that a shooter has a mental health issue. And let's see, Laurie says, why did Justice Kennedy choose this particular time to retire? He must have known that chaos would result. One possibility is that a recusal is a recusal as well as a retirement. Justice Kennedy's son Justin has ties to the Trump family and organization. While CEO of LNR, he allowed Jared Kushner to retain control of 666 Fifth Avenue by modifying his $1.2 billion mortgage. Justice Kennedy was one of Mr. Trump's most trusted associates over a 12-year spell at Deutsche, the money laundering bank where Trump was involved. Thank you for all you do. Thanks. Far from being enemies of the people, the press will be the saving of our democracy. Julie says, violence against women. The journalist attack is traceable to a stalking case. Please mention the violence against women. A canary in the coal mine for over 80% of these domestic terrorist shootings. That's from Julie.
And she's right. I can't remember if we talked about that on air or if we were talking in between, but that's the problem.
That's
a big indicia. These guys who get these harassment complaints and get the restraining order and it's real. It's got to be so much. There's got to be so much more than that. And I just think that again, I'll use the word again. That's just an indicia of either a really unbalanced person.
You can't use that word
an unbalanced or an evil
Aaron
person.
Now.
She's right about that. Yeah. There needs to be more focus on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and here we go. Stuart may have the best letter of the day. After hanging out with Rye Cooter, and learning about the open G tuning, Keith Richards had a dream and woke up and wrote Honky Tonk Woman. He continued to play guitar in that tuning until today, and that's thanks from Stuart.
By the way, if you're ever trying to play Brown Sugar on guitar, do it in an open G tuning.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
He tuned his guitar like a banjo.
Yeah,
more or less.
We banjo players know about open G tuning.
I mean.
Jen? We just went full circle. That was the Sesame Street loop.
Yeah, right.
All right. we're out of time, and boy, it doesn't seem like it, does it? No. So like, we've run out of anything to say. My thanks to everybody. Hope you have a lovely weekend. Rich, when are you coming back?
I'll be back soon.
All right. Okay.
Pretty evasive.
Aaron, just so you know, we're not here next Friday. We're going to be at Tanglewood.
Okay.
So maybe
then
you
I won't
come,
be here.
Maybe you can come in for another date next week.
Let me know. Yeah,
that would
sure.
be great. Jen, Wednesday is 4th of July, so maybe you can come in on another date next week.
Yes.
I'm doing business during the last minute of the show, just to try to get everybody scheduled.
It's kind of a coercive aspect
to this. You're going to be in the Pittsfield Parade?
I am.
On a float? In a car? What are you doing?
We will have our Eagle unit with our moments in time, our historic moments of the Eagle and the First Amendment.
And you, Pittsfield is known for the 4th of July Parade.
We are.
That is a big deal. So congratulations. That'll be really fun.
Thank
Fantastic.
You.
Well, have a great 4th. Alan, anything fun going on?
Yeah, I'm going to be twirling my baton outside of the house.
Outside of your
house? Is that what the kids are calling it these days? We'll be back after this short break.